to all who work in schools. The second was to reduce class sizes, provide more support to educators in schools, more nurses, counselors, and librarians.
We were able to reach an agreement that we'll be able to explain more details of later, but include so many elements that are so important to our students, to our families, to our parents. Some of the, just quickly, a little list, class size is something that has desperately needed to be addressed in Los Angeles, and we have started down a real path to addressing class size. Nurses, librarians, and counselors, so many schools have gone without for so long, and now they'll have these crucial services.
That's UTLA President Alex Caputo-Pearl speaking alongside LAUSD Superintendent Austin Buettner on Tuesday, announcing an agreement after 7 days of teachers striking. Later in the afternoon, a vote was held among union members who passed the agreement, officially ending the strike. On our show tomorrow, we'll analyze the agreement and how the LA strike can be a model for teacher-led revolts elsewhere. Democrats are under fire for muddying the waters on an effort to pass Medicare for All legislation. Lawmakers in the House, where the Democrats hold a decisive majority, have introduced at least 8 bills on health care that critics are casting as Medicare for some. Among them are Senator Sherrod Brown, who's considering a run for president and has introduced a bill allowing only retiring police and firefighters access to the Medicare system before they hit retirement age. Brown said, quote, "It's easy to say Medicare for all and make a good speech, but see no action." According to Politico, the bills, quote, "range from modest Medicare reforms to more ambitious restructurings that would extend government-run care to millions of new patients, an array of options that fall short of campaign trail promises for full Medicare for all." Representative Pramila Jayapal has introduced the only truly Medicare for all bill, a version that independent Senator Bernie Sanders has backed in the Senate. Senator Ed Merkley explained, quote, "If we could make the leap straight to Medicare for All, I would love for us to do that. But it's important to lay out a route about how we get to that vision. If you tell people the only choice they have is Medicare, that could produce a lot of folks being concerned about, wait a minute, I like my health care and you're telling me I have to leave it." A political group named Protect Our Care, which is invested in strengthening Obamacare, has been developing messaging for Democrats on the issue. Also deeply concerned about Medicare for All is, of course, the health insurance industry that sees an existential threat from a government-run system. Meanwhile, there is greater public support for a fully government-run Medicare for All system than ever before. A new Kaiser poll found that 71% of Americans support guaranteed health insurance as a right for all. President Trump is frustrated with his lawyer Rudy Giuliani after the former New York City mayor's latest round of media interviews went awry. Giuliani appears to be trying to play the role of public relations for the president over the special counsel's investigation. Instead, he often implicates the president further by admitting Trump took guilty-sounding actions that contradict earlier denials. Associated Press is reporting that, quote, three White House officials and Republicans close to the White House explained that Trump believes Giuliani has, quote, changed the headlines for the worse. There is also a concern that Giuliani might be drunk during his evening interviews. Trump has asked the U.S. Supreme Court to rule quickly on a question of citizenship on the next census. A U.S. district judge last week ordered that plans to add the question to the survey be stopped, given that Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross apparently broke a number of federal rules in forcing the question on the survey. The Justice Department on Tuesday, instead of going to the U.S. Second Circuit Court of Appeals as expected, went straight to the Supreme Court, saying there wouldn't be enough time to get a ruling. Solicitor General Noel Francisco wrote in his request, quote, "The government must finalize the census questionnaire by the end of June 2019 to enable it to be printed on time. It is exceedingly unlikely that there is sufficient time for review in both the Court of Appeals and in this court by that deadline." President Trump championed adding a citizenship question to the U.S. Census as part of his broader anti-immigrant agenda. The World Economic Forum continues in Davos, Switzerland, with the arrival of several heads of state. President Trump and his cabinet members, who attended last year's meeting, are notably absent due to the government shutdown. Instead, it is Brazil's new president, Jair Bolsonaro, who embodies Trump's spirit that has dominated the gathering of business and world leaders at the summit. In addition to selling Brazil as a business-friendly nation, according to the New York Times, Bolsonaro also, quote, said Brazil would purge left-wing ideology from its politics and society, and he made no apologies for emphasizing economic growth, something his critics will say will come at the cost of protecting Brazil's environment. Our motto is God above all things, Bolsonaro also said. Former U.S. State Secretary John Kerry is attending the Davos gathering. On Tuesday, Kerry was asked what he would have said to Trump had the U.S. president attended. Kerry first hesitated and then just said one word, resign. The Washington Post reported that, quote, the audience of mostly elite business, academic, and government leaders from around the world initially laughed at Kerry's comment, and then many clapped and cheered. And that does it for our headlines today. Later on our show, we'll examine what the Davos gathering is all about with Paul O'Brien of Oxfam America, and we'll discuss Oxfam's annual report on global inequality. This year's report is called Public Good or Private Wealth. Stay tuned. KPFK Pacifica Radio. This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. As a record-breaking partial government shutdown stretches into its second month with no end in sight, Republican senators have introduced a new bill running 1,300 pages long. The bill offers a three-year extension for DACA registrants and billions of dollars in disaster relief, as well as, of course, the $5.7 billion for President Donald Trump's border wall. Democrats rejected the bill outright, with House Speaker Nancy Pelosi calling it a non-starter, and Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer accusing the president of hostage-taking. But Republican leader Mitch McConnell plans on introducing the bill in the Senate anyway and taking a vote count as early as Thursday. On Saturday, Trump gave yet another speech from the White House to make his case for a border wall, repeating many of the lies about crime and violence pouring into the U.S. from Mexico. Here is an excerpt from his speech. That's President Trump speaking on Saturday at the White House about immigration. We turn now to Juan Escalante. He's a digital strategist and immigration advocate and a DACA recipient. He's also the immigration correspondent for our program. Welcome back to the show, Juan.
As a candidate for president, I promised I would fix this crisis, and I intend to keep that promise one way or the other. Our immigration system should be the subject of pride, not a source of shame, as it is all over the world. Our immigration system should be the envy of the world, not a symbol of disunity and dysfunction. The good news is these problems can all be solved, but only if we have the political courage to do what is just and what is right. Both sides in Washington must simply come together, listen to each other, put down their armor, build trust, reach across the aisle, and find solutions. It is time to reclaim our future from the extreme voices who fear compromise and demand open borders, which means drugs pouring in, human trafficking, and a lot of crime. That is why...
Thank you so much for having me.
So first, let's discuss what's in the Republican bill that is being introduced, that's going to be voted on Thursday. It's a huge bill, 1,300 pages long. There's a significant aspect of it that is regarding DACA, the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program, very important for you personally as a DACA registrant. And apparently it extends the program for 3 years, but all of that's happening at the same day that the Supreme Court has decided to leave DACA alone, which seems to take away some of the administration's leverage on DACA, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think what we're witnessing right now is essentially a complete pivot from the administration's hard line on immigration to some extent. And I want to make sure that I don't diminish some of the very horrible and detrimental things that they have done to immigrant communities and to our nation as a whole. First and foremost, I think the center part of this debate is essentially that the media keeps reporting that Trump is offering up some sort of deal for Dreamers in exchange for wall funding. His deal is nothing else than an extension of 3 years of DACA beneficiaries without any for protections for DACA beneficiaries like myself, without any sort of certainty that there will be a path toward citizenship or another challenge that he brings up to the table later down the road. So that's out of the gate an immediate concern for the community and for myself. Number two, we have to understand here what exactly is happening. The president terminated the DACA program, is currently still trying to push a lawsuit through the Supreme Court to terminate these protections. And at the same time, he's trying to use it as a carrot to get his border wall money without us making any sort of commitments. Now, you know, I don't know what essentially the administration is thinking when it comes down to it, but when you follow the breadcrumb trail, right, it's very logical what's happening here. One, the president terminated DACA protections. Two, he's suing to end the program, you know, once and for all. And three, he's trying to bring the program back, the one that he says is an unconstitutional action by President Obama, for 3 extra years without any sort of promises. He's giving something temporary to Dreamers like myself in exchange for something permanent like a border wall. And to me, that's just not a deal that anybody could essentially sign up for.
There are also apparently some stated concessions, or I should say they're being cast as concessions, for the TPS program, the Temporary Protected Status program. But again, just as is the case for DACA, if you look into the details, I understand that it's not really a concession. This is a program that basically allows people fleeing disaster from countries like Haiti to live legally in the U.S.
Correct. And it's essentially following the same pattern, correct? So it's a 3-year extension on these benefits that the administration essentially took away starting early last year in 2018 and 2017. So when we look at essentially both of these parameters that the president is trying to offer something that Democrats really want, which is the protection of TPS holders and Dreamers, he does so in a very shaky ground type of way. He's not offering anything in good faith while simultaneously keeping the government shut down, something that's hurting hundreds of thousands of people, if not millions of people, because we have to take into account that some of these individuals that are federal contractors and workers have families. So at the end of the day, you know, if the president wanted to have a serious conversation about immigration, he would reopen the government, and then we can essentially have a real dialogue without facing the backdrop of a lot of the economical damage that's being done to individuals across this country, to businesses, and to the federal government and our economy as well. Mm-hmm. So unfortunately, you know, the TPS angle and the Dream Act angle follow the same exact thing. The president is responsible for terminating it, and now he's trying to use it as political leverage to essentially further down his anti-immigrant agenda that he's perpetuated since day one.
And then there are actually strict restrictions on immigration in the bill. I mean, if you imagine that this is in any way a compromise, the imposition put on asylum seekers, particularly from Central America, does away with any perception that it's a compromise. I understand that in this bill that Mitch McConnell is going to introduce and force a vote on is assertion that Central American asylum seekers are going to have to apply for asylum to the United States only from a to-be-designated center in their countries in the future, which, of course, violates asylum law, right?
Well, I will divert a lot of that line of questioning, essentially in specifics, to legal organizations that deal a lot of with essentially asylum claims. You know, things like the National Immigration Law Center, Center for American Progress have a lot of resources when it comes to this kind of. What I will point out, though, is essentially, you know, this argument that people have to essentially get in a line and wait in their home country. A lot of the folks that are essentially fleeing from Central American countries are fleeing violence in very dangerous conditions. So when you essentially, you know, and this is to kind of break it down for the viewer and for the listener in this most plain thing. If you're fleeing dangerous and very traumatic decisions, I mean, conditions in your home country, would you want to, you know, file an application and remain there waiting for whatever catastrophe to happen? You know, is that a logical step, or is that a sensible solution, you know, to the problems that a lot of people who are seeking better opportunities and better lives for themselves should be put under? And, you know, unfortunately, again, that's just something that just is unrealistic, and it's just unbearable for me to even think about, that we will force individuals who want to come to the United States and do so legally by applying to asylum to essentially say, hey, I know that you're fleeing very dangerous conditions. Say, for example, in my country, in my home country of Venezuela, I know you're fleeing these very strenuous conditions, but you have to go back and wait your time there. Like, you know, it really doesn't add up to any sort of logic.
One analyst, Gabrielle Mellor, said asylum is a form of relief for people who are being persecuted in their home countries, and the authorities there are unable or unwilling to protect them or are the source of the persecution. You can't condition asylum on people remaining in the place where they are persecuted. One other immigration lawyer analyzed that the bill that McConnell and the Republicans are putting forward would allow only 50,000 Central American minors to apply for asylum, not to actually get asylum, but to just apply, 50,000 Central American minors a year, and only 15,000 applications would be granted, not by immigration judges, but by Homeland Security Department officials. So essentially, it sounds like, again, the Republicans and Trump are, and they're very much in unison here, right, Juan, that McConnell and Trump are on the same page. They are offering a bill that they're casting as a compromise bill for Democrats, but it was essentially just another bludgeon. The Democrats have already said they wouldn't accept any of this.
I mean, if you think about it, the president has had plenty and ample opportunities to negotiate a deal on immigration, you know, more than once at this point in time. The problem that consistently that persists in our political system right now is not essentially whether or not, the proposals can be, and I've heard this, you know, from some talkers on TV, that this is just a starting point, that, you know, things could be amended and negotiated down the legislative process. There's no guarantee that if this bill that Mitch McConnell is putting forth, if it's amended, that the president will sign it, right? So for somebody that has a history over the past 2 years of moving the goalpost when it comes to immigration legislation and not negotiating in full faith, there is essentially no incentive for Democratic actors out there to essentially go out there and shake the president's hands and say, we're going to take this deal, because it's not a serious one that protects the communities that we care about, one. And two, it's essentially is designated as a political ploy, unfortunately, to go after a significant number of individuals and communities who right now are living a very dire situation. They're fearful for their future in this country. Dreamers, TPS holders, their families, you know, some of whom include U.S. citizens, children or spouses. So at the end of the day, what the president needs to do is essentially what I reiterated at the top of the program, which is essentially, if he wants to get serious about immigration and have a sensible conversation on the matter, he should, one, reopen the government, two, be serious about the subject and act like the president of the United States, not essentially cave to any sort of political actors outside of his sphere of power, meaning television pundits. And really listen to the issues and the sensible solutions that can be presented. The president keeps saying that Democrats are against border control or that they want open borders. That's just simply not true. When you listen down and when you sit down and listen to both sides of the argument, what you really understand is that what the solution needs to be is a sensible set of pragmatic legislations or any sort of fixes to our immigration system that will make our country not only more secure, but will update our immigration system so that it functions for everybody who wants to come and live the American dream.
Now, Juan, what is the Supreme Court's decision? What does that actually mean for DACA recipients like yourself? Is it that the Supreme Court is just sort of temporarily saying that they will not take a decision because there's a legal battle going on, and depending on the outcome of that battle, they may take up the DACA program in the future? Or is this the end of the Supreme Court line on DACA?
No, I think you're right on your original assessment.
Okay.
What we've learned here today essentially says the Supreme Court has not granted the petition to hear the case. That does not mean that they will not essentially reconsider in terms of putting this case up for hearing and debate towards the fall. What's happening right now is that towards its term in the spring, the Supreme Court has essentially filled out its calendar and not essentially come down to a decision to grant cert to this case. Now, these justices will convene once again next month and try to figure out what cases they will hear down the line into their next term in October. But for the meantime, you know, Dreamers can essentially see this as another opportunity to continue to renew their DACA applications if they're eligible for renewal. A reminder, you know, for those who qualify for this program is that this is only for individuals who have already been admitted into the program. So far, there's not been any new applications that will be accepted under these injunctions that currently keep the program functioning while the legal process goes on through its way.
I'm so glad you reminded us of that. DACA is on hold, and so only those people like yourself who did register when they were eligible are currently afforded a very tentative measure of protection, but it's very tentative, and anybody who might have been eligible is unable to submit a new application right now. So let's also talk about the fact that the Democrats have been actually putting forward bills in the House, right? We're only hearing about this Republican compromise bill they're calling it a compromise bill and saying that the Democrats won't accept it. But haven't the House Democrats been putting forward, sponsoring, and even passing bills to reopen the federal government that Trump and McConnell aren't acknowledging, and even the media aren't really doing a good job of covering?
I think what the public needs to realize is that essentially the impasse here is not essentially one that is being done in ill way by the Democratic Party. The issue at hand and how we got to this place was because the President of the United States wanted to have a revote on a piece of legislation that was essentially voted in the Senate, kicked over to the House, and essentially told the Speaker at the time, Paul Ryan, that he was not going to sign this bill unless it included $5.7 billion to fund his border wall and a bunch of other concessions that he wants on immigration. And, you know, we found ourselves in this position. Now, the Democrats, who just took over the House under the leadership of Nancy Pelosi, the new Speaker, have essentially insisted time and time again that they will pass the already passed bill and with an addition to other measures to continue to open them to reopen the government. So if you think about it, the Republican Party in the Senate already passed a bill that will have funded the government and fixed it once and for all. Even if that bill passed the House today, it will have to be approved once again by the Senate, where Mitch McConnell is essentially crossing his arms and saying, we will not concede to this unless it meets the president's demand. So, you know, the logjam here goes further than just a lack of interest or attempts. It's the fact that we are unwilling to recognize the damages that this is currently doing, due to the fact that the president has signaled that he won't sign anything that won't include his $5.7 billion. And he is unwilling to negotiate on that, even, you know, by just sheerly opening the government. So if he really cared about the everyday American, he will reopen the government and then continue negotiations to find sensible solutions that work for both sides of the aisle instead of keeping the paychecks of hundreds of thousands of employees and their families held up for ransom.
Now, Juan, there was a news story that came and went without much of a blip as this entire debate over immigration and the so-called border wall is happening, and that is that the story of family separation that roiled the country last summer, we found out just a week or so ago that there were potentially thousands more families that were separated than the government initially let on, that were just not tracked in the same way, and that number of about 2,700-odd children separated from their family is a very much low end of the number. That story just came and went. It should have informed this debate on immigration and the border wall and the government shutdown, shouldn't it?
Yeah, I think I feel confident that this kind of stuff will not just essentially be swept under the rug anymore. You have Democrats who have essentially pledged to hold the government accountable for this kind of unfortunate rollout of policies that, you know, has been in the back of our minds of everyday Americans because they were designed to be so cruel and, you know, were handled in the most irresponsible kinds of ways by the Department of Homeland Security and other federal actors. Ultimately, I think what essentially is going to end up happening, and this is just a prediction, is that we're going to continue to press for the federal government to continue to be opened. And I wouldn't suspect that the Democrats are going to waste any time to summon Kirstjen Nielsen and other agents from the Department of Homeland Security back to Capitol Hill to testify in committee what is going on and why is it that more and more of these cases continue to be unearthed, you know, by the media, by third-party actors, by the government itself, in terms of acknowledging what the policies and how far-reaching they were, how damaging they were, and where are these children and how are they being reunited with their parents.
Right. This is a story that has not been wrapped up. President Trump has boasted about his approval rating among Latinos, by the way, in a new poll, Marist NPR PBS poll, and showing that the approval rating among Latinos is going to 50%, an increase in 1 year of 19%. And he is tying that to his firmness on the border wall. What do you make of this?
I think that the president will say anything to convey a position of strength, even at the end of the day when, you know, national polls or other sort of methodology doesn't essentially hold or stand in and of itself any sort of weight. Anything that the president deems viable and favorable to his image, he will essentially go in front of a camera and scream at it, even if it's not, you know, if it doesn't hold water in and of itself.
And it looks as though there is growing support for the border wall among the U.S. public, at least some polls are showing. However, there is still not most who do support, apparently do not support keeping the federal government shut down over this issue. Do you think that the ongoing rhetoric, the xenophobia, all of the lies that Trump and his supporters are spewing about crime flowing over the border, that propaganda is unfortunately having an effect, that some Americans, even though they may not agree with the shutdown to get the border wall, are starting to believe the rhetoric?
I think what ultimately it was going to weigh in people's minds is essentially that there are families out there that are, you know, are struggling very, very much to make ends meet when it comes down to this. You know, it's unfortunate that we have to drag such a big and complex issue like immigration down to this debate when we should be essentially having open discussions about good policy instead of trying to play tricks in political games with the lives of not just federal workers, but with people that consider themselves American and are integral parts of our communities. That includes Dreamers, TPS holders, and immigrants who continue to be at the center of this discussion. And it's rather unfortunate that we continue to see this kind of debate unfold the way that it is while there's still people out there working right now without any pay.
Well, Juan, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Good luck to you. Let's see how the story plays out.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Juan Escalante is a digital strategist and immigrant advocate. He's also a DACA recipient and the immigration correspondent for our program, Rising Up with Sonali. And we've been discussing the latest legislative battle to end the government shutdown. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Subscribe to our audio podcast on iTunes and our video channel on Vimeo.
It is 5:58. KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is also available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Board meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The KBOO Board of Directors meets the fourth Monday of the month, starting at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 29th Annual Cascade Festival of African Films from Friday, February 1st through Saturday, March 2nd. The Cascade Festival of African Films represent different countries and cultures and a range of lifestyles from pre-colonial to modern times, including both rural and urban settings. Films include Razzia, a film from Morocco, and more at the Hollywood Theater, and Wale from Burkina Faso, Fig Tree from Ethiopia, shorts from emerging African filmmakers, and many more at the Moriarty Arts and Humanities Building, Room 104, at the PCC Cascade Campus, 705 North Killingsworth Street in Portland. Again, that's the 29th Annual Cascade Festival of African Films from Friday, February 1st through Saturday, March 2nd. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
I was never cool in school. I'm sure you don't remember me.
And now it's been 10 years, I'm still wondering who to be.
And I'd love to mix in circles, clicks, and social coteries. That's me. Hand me my nose ring.
Can we be happy?
Show me the mosh pit.
Can we